Welcome to the Nocilla podcast for Sunday, July 10th, 2005. I believe this is my fifth podcast, and if you haven't been here before, I just want to let you know this is a tech podcast with a very slight Macintosh bias. I'm your host, Allison Sheridan. I tried recording this podcast in the car a little while ago, not with car running, of course, but it didn't really come out right, so I'm going to give it a whirl and try to record the whole doggone thing again. Hope you enjoy it. Today's podcast is going to cover my favorite freeware and shareware. One of my pet peeves is people who describe a solution, they come up to you and they go, oh man, I found this great tool, it's the coolest thing ever, but they don't tell you what problem it solves for you. How does it help them in their life? They just tell you it's cool. So I'm going to try to resist the urge that all engineers have to start with a solution and decide on a problem that they should solve. And I'm going to try to, in every case, tell you what the problem is first and then tell you what tool I found to solve the problem for me. I don't mean this to be an exhaustive research study of every shareware application that could solve these problems, just the ones I found that really seem to make my life a little bit easier. I want to put a definition in here first, the difference between freeware and shareware. Freeware is an application that the author intends to give away for free. For example, open source applications are by definition free. They have other restrictions along with them, but in terms of having to pay any money, they're definitely free. But shareware is software that you can download for free, you can use it for free, but if you really like it and you tend to use it a lot, you're really supposed to pay the author. I like it because it makes sure that you found something that you really need before you have to pay for it. Imagine if you could test out a piece of Microsoft software, a different module of software, and say, yeah, you know, that PowerPoint, don't really like it, but Excel, I'll pay for that one. That seems like a good tool. That would be pretty cool. So it is important if you download shareware to make sure that you pay the application vendor and give them their money. And plus, it's really cheap. Usually it's around 10, 15, 20 bucks for the good stuff. I think the most I've ever paid for shareware was $30. I found my freeware and shareware through two sources. One of my main sources is the website versiontracker.com. While it does have software for Windows and the Palm operating system, it's really pretty much oriented towards the Mac community. From what I understand, there's a site called downloads.com that's supposed to be sort of the equivalent in the PC community. The second source I use is my buddy Niraj. And Niraj is the guy who calls me up or instant messages me probably 3-4 times a week and says, this is the coolest application ever. You have to try it. In fact, he gives me so many applications that I had to scrape my hard disk the other day because I just had so much sludge on it from downloading 3 or 4 applications a week. It's great fun and I really enjoy it and I don't mean him to stop. I really do get a big kick out of it. For all of the applications here, I'm going to put links in my show notes to show you where you can download them, but I'm also going to try to mention the website in the podcast here so you can get an idea of where to go look if you don't want to wait for to go all the way to the web to look them up. All right, the first problem I wanted to solve was my company uses SameTime as their chat client. I know, everybody uses any other chat client except SameTime, but we try to find the hardest tool possible to do everything. So anyway, we use SameTime, and while I'm not really huge on chatting at work, I've got to admit it is pretty handy when I'm in a meeting and I can pop open a chat window and get an answer to a question. Of course, I can only find those answers from people under 30 because those are the only people on the chat client. But anyway, the problem is that their SameTime doesn't work on the Mac. But luckily, there are a few shareware vendors out there who have created applications to provide this functionality. The one that I'm pretty fond of is called Adium X, which is currently on freeware. It's from adiumx.com. It might be freeware because it's version 0.82, I'm not sure, but as of right now, it is freeware. Adium works as a SameTime client and also works with AIM, AOL's Instant Messenger protocol. It does a whole mess of other protocols like MSN Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, and non-mainstream ones like Jabber, ICQ, Novell GroupWise, Yahoo Japan, and something called Gadu Gadu. I must need to go find out what that Gadu Gadu stuff is. One thing I like about Adium X is that it has the ability to customize what kind of sounds you listen to when certain events happen. I know a lot of other chat clients do that too, but one of my favorites is that it allows you to have the message somebody's put up actually spoken to you, so you can hear those words being spoken to you. It's kind of fun. And the reason it solves a problem for me is because I have a habit of opening a chat client and then I kind of forget and I walk away or I turn around and I'm doing something else and someone's talking to me and that little icon's bouncing away in the dock, but I don't notice that they're trying to get hold of me. Well, with AdiumX set to read all the messages to me, I notice real quick if somebody's got something to say to me. It was a little embarrassing the other day when I forgot and left it on when I was in a meeting, and then I left the meeting to go take a phone call, and apparently somebody decided to quite start chatting with me. Too bad it was my boss's meeting. But anyway, from now on, I'm going to try to remember to mute my AdiumX when I'm in meetings. The next problem I have is that my favorite digital cable channel, Tech TV, got canceled, and with it, a show called Call for Help, starring my favorite tech guy, Leo Laporte. I actually got rid of digital cable because they canceled Tech TV, because that was the only reason I got digital cable in the first place. Turns out Leo was able to sell the show to Tech TV in Canada, which has not been canceled. Fat lot of good that does me, right? Well, enter BitTorrent to the rescue. Now, BitTorrent isn't an application, it's actually a technology. So I got to explain the technology and then I'll get you to the application. BitTorrent was originally invented to increase the efficiency of peer-to-peer file sharing. Most broadband connections are asynchronous, meaning the upload and download speeds are different. So you can, if you've ever noticed, your download speed, if you've got a high-speed broadband connection, might be 3,000 kilobits per second or 3 megabits per second, and your upload speed might be only 384 kilobits per second. So you can upload only at about a tenth of the speed that you can download. Well, if you're doing file sharing, and like just swapping small files back and forth, little bitty files, that doesn't make any difference because they come across so quickly, it doesn't really matter. But imagine if you were trying to download a huge file, like let's say a Linux distribution that runs about 600 megabits. That's a pretty, 600 megabytes, that's a pretty doggone big file, and that's going to take forever if the person trying to give it to you is only giving it to you at 384 kilobits a second. So the way BitTorrent works is it chops the file up into little bits and you can have, say, 10 people giving it to you at 300 kilobits a second, and you're downloading at 3,000 kilobits a second because you're getting all 10 feeds at the same time. Pretty tricky little bit of technology, and it's kind of neat how it breaks it up. So it's kind of a neat technology that will allow you to download really big files. So you're trying to figure out, what does this have to do with Tech TV, Leo Laporte, and my loss of digital cable, and my terrible loss of the show Call for Help? And what tool does that even have to do with? Well, luckily, someone's creating video files of Leo's TV show in Canada, and he or she puts them online as BitTorrents. Which means that if I had a BitTorrent application, I could watch my favorite Leo again. I use an open source application called Azurius from sourceforge.net to solve the problem for me. I like it because it's really simple to set up. You can download or set up your downloads, which is called leeching, and your uploads, which is called seeding. It's kind of a nice terminology. Anyway, it makes cool graphs of your progress, your history, shows up how chopped up your files are, allows you to graph, it shows you how fast you're downloading as a function of time, which is fun to watch and see what your best possible times are. The application, most importantly, works consistently, and also it allows the user to limit how much of their upload bandwidth to get sucked up by this BitTorrent thing. The first time I set it up, I just kind of let it run and let it upload to other people as fast as they wanted it. Well, that meant my entire 384 kilobit per second pipe was completely flooded with this BitTorrent file going out to everybody else, which my teenage son, who was trying to play video games online, kind of noticed. So it is important to go in there and make sure you limit how fast you let your uploads go. I set it to 50 kilobits per second on recommendation of some friends of mine, and that seems to work pretty well. The most important thing, of course, about an application is making sure it has a cool icon, and this one has this really neat-looking shiny blue frog that I like. All right, it's time for a morals clause regarding BitTorrent. However, this is a touchy area, and everyone has to make their own decisions on what they're going to do here and what's the difference between right and wrong. Many people download first-run movies using BitTorrent. People sneak into movie theaters with video cameras, and they tape them and then put them online as BitTorrents, and people watch the movie. I'm kind of thinking that the people who are all excited about watching Star Wars before anybody else gets to see it, those are probably the people who run out and watch Star Wars in the theater 10 or 11 times, that sort of thing, the real fanatics. a lot of people just download movies that they're too lazy to go rent at the video store, and I'm not sure that's right. I'm sure the recording industry thinks it's completely wrong. I'm hoping, though, that this plays out the same way the music sharing went, is we had a lot of people sharing illegally the music files, stealing them. But what happened was that the music industry actually got a huge boost in terms of the number of people that were listening to music and going out and buying real music. So it actually didn't damage them very much in terms of they did get more revenue than they had ever had before. Perhaps they would have had even more if the file sharing hadn't gone on. But anyway, my real point is that because of the bootleggers, the music industry had to respond. They had to come out with a way to allow people to download music legally because the technology was there and they were going to use it, and they were going to use it by stealing if they didn't come out with a better way. Enter iTunes and the other online music stores, which now allow you to have a nice user experience. You're all legal, but you still get to download it instead of driving to the store, and get a single instead of having to pay for an album, and you get it at a reasonable price because a dollar a song's pretty good. Well, I'm hoping that's the same thing that happens with the movies, that with people downloading them illegally, I'm hoping that it's a kind of a necessary part of the product development process that allows people to be pushed and forced into coming up with a better way to do this. Because downloading video is here, and they better figure out a way to let us get it legally, because otherwise people are going to do it illegally anyway. Anyway, Azurious is a cool tool, and with the charts and graphs, you can compete with your friends on your bandwidth, with your other geek friends, and compare notes. Some of the video files now are coming down in a format that may be difficult to read. So I want to make use of a tool I use daily, but it kind of solves a pretty unique problem. So I'm not sure it's for everybody, but if you run across this problem, you might be interested. Video is compressed by the content creator, and then it's uncompressed by your receiving computer. In order to play a video that you've downloaded, you need to have the correct codec or compressor decompression algorithm in your player. So if you've got RealPlayer or QuickTime or whatever, it's got certain codecs in it that it understands. But I've been running across video content that players like QuickTime can't play. In fact, specifically BitTorrent files like Leo Laporte's Call for Help show. So I found a tool called VLC. VLC decodes DivX, VCD, MPEG 1, 2, and 4, and even more, some codecs I've never even heard of, and it's freeware. It plays these files perfectly. There's a full screen button on the controller that blows Leo's face all the way up so I can fill my screen with his lovely mug. There's a time counter that lets me note how much I've watched because I watch it in little 15-minute chunks, and then I can note it and say, okay, need to start 15 minutes in the next time. And so if you have some video files that you can't seem to open, you might want to check out VLC from videoland.org. It's kind of a nice little tool that just does one little tiny bitty function. The next piece of software I'm going to describe is a little bit easier. It has no moral impact, no morals clause. The problem to be solved here is how to upload files to my website server. All I needed was a simple FTP client, file transfer protocol, to handle the task. I needed something to shove the files up to my website. Enter CyberDuck, yet another open source offering from cyberduck.ch. I'm a little concerned that's a Chinese group, so I'm not sure how I feel about China right now with some of the crazy things they've been doing. But anyway, I have to confess, I like the name CyberDuck, and I like the little rubber ducky icon. Remember, that's the critical piece here. Got to make sure you have a good icon. It's not quite as cool as the shiny blue frog from Azurius, but it is pretty nice. Anyway, the tool allows simple drag and drop, so I can grab a pile of files and just drag them into a window, and it automatically uploads them to the website as soon as I do that. It has a nice bookmark list that allows the user to have several websites stored and makes it easy to switch between them. So I've got a couple different websites I upload to, and I can just toggle between those, and it's real easy. This application doesn't do a lot, but it does its function clearly and simply, which are the two major things for me. My next problem is that my husband and I are evidently addicted to buying DVDs. With about 150 of them in the house, it seems like it's an important thing to try to organize them because we're engineers and we're anal about organization. So we, of course, have little labels on them and have our phone numbers and our names, and we have them in a database. So quit making fun of us, but that's what we do. The tool we use is called DVD Cache, and it's $20, and it does a really slick job of cataloging DVDs. It just recently went into its full-fledged 1.0 version. I really like this developer because he comes out with a lot of updates, but they were running Asymptotic to 1.0 for the longest time. It was 0.996, 0.997, 0.999. Then he came out with 0.999F. I thought he was never going to get there, but I just checked the other day and he was up to 1.0. He's also really good about responding. I've had a little, couple of little issues and he writes back within just a couple hours. So that's kind of one of the nice things you get out of a shareware application that maybe you don't get out of a big application. Has Microsoft ever written back to you? Anyway, or Apple for that sake, let's be fair. So back to DVD cache. To add a DVD to your collection, you merely click Add, type in the name, and the software does a search of the Internet Movie Database, IMDb, and Amazon. And it downloads all the information from their database down to his database, or in this case, your database. It pulls in a high-quality movie poster. It collects the information on the actors, the director, the writer, the movie length, when it was made, the rating, all kinds of useful information, all kinds of neat stuff you can do with it. The newest 1.0 version handles books, video games, and music too, but I haven't had a chance to play with those features yet since it just came out about a week ago. There's one little tiny application that makes my life at work a little easier. I've tried a lot of methods to track my phone messages and other action items. I've tried a dedicated notebook where I check off calls I've returned or dealt with in some way, but when I picked up messages away from the office, I wouldn't have my book with me. Also, it didn't give me a way to enter what I did about the call because I never left myself enough space to enter the information about it. I hate wasting paper. It was also tedious to flip back through the book to try and remember some guy's name or a phone number or, what I told the guy, that sort of thing. Like everyone else, I also occasionally slip into the bad habit of using Post-it notes, which at best is messy and has no traceability, but it does have the advantage of being extremely satisfying to throw them away after you've completed an action item to reduce clutter. I found a little shareware application a while ago. It's cost $15 and it's called Todo, Todo, all one word. It's from Omicron Software, who for no apparent reason has a website nomicro.com. Not sure why they did that. That didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. But anyway, it's the simplicity of this tool. Again, you're noting a theme here is that a simple tool that does what it's supposed to do really well, that's what I like. The simplicity of this tool appeals to me, and it does what it's supposed to do, and it doesn't have a lot of fancy features, but it's a very, very intuitive piece of software. Todo has a left and right pane. The left side is where the user creates categories for action items, and the right side is for the action items themselves. I haven't created a lot of categories. Mainly, I use one called Work and one called Work Completed. To enter a new action item, or in my case, primarily phone messages, a click of the plus sign at the bottom opens a window that has a title field and then a notes field down below. One of the great features of this application is in the notes field, you're entering that you returned the guy's call or whatever. Before you type in the note, you can click on the timestamp at the bottom and it enters the day and time you wrote the note. So it's real easy to keep track of when you returned a phone call, or like if I foist the call off on somebody else, I can timestamp when I did it so I can tell, hey, it's been a couple of days, better check and see if so-and-so really followed up on that or if there's anything else I need to help. There's a scale of 1 to 5 for prioritizing the messages, but well, let's be truthful. We all put 1 on everything. If I put 5 on something, that's like saying, well, I'm never going to do this. But they put it there just in case you have more discipline than I do. There's a checkbox for when it's completed, and that brings it to the bottom of the list. And then what I do is I drag the ones with the check marks over to my work completed list. One convenient preference you can set in To-Do's window is to have To-Do's window disappear as soon as you click away from it. So if you're in To-Do and you want to go over to Word, you switch over to Word and To-Do just simply disappears. It's still running, but you can't see it. I think this is a feature that would probably appeal to a lot of people, but personally I find this non-standard window behavior disconcerting, so I turned it off. But I bet there's a lot of people who would like that. To-Do solves the problem of traceability very, very well and in a very intuitive way. If you select the category you want to search, so let's say I go to Work Completed, and you just start typing in a couple of characters of the word you're looking for. So let's say I'm looking for something I wrote about Apple. I can click over to there and I just start typing. I'm not typing in any field, I just type Apple. And all of the action items that had the word Apple anywhere in them will highlight. And then you can go through them and double-click them and see if it's the one you're looking for. It just is so easy. I'm afraid I did have to read the help menu to figure out how to do this, but it was very, very useful as soon as I figured it out. I'm not big on reading instructions, so don't get me wrong, but this did actually help. So this makes it really easy for someone like me with a terrible memory to be able to search the database and figure out what was that guy's name again, which I'm doing all the time. Oh, I mentioned that when I did keep my phone list in a little notebook, it was difficult because I didn't always have it with me. Well, I always have my PowerBook with me, so now when I go to a different site and I'm taking phone messages, I can write it down right in there and it's always with me. Not sure that solves the problem for people who don't carry a computer around, but it works for me. I'm pretty sure there's a lot more nifty tools in this product that I have yet to discover because I haven't read all the documentation, but just these few simple features will have given me the organization I was seeking. The last tool I'm going to review is my absolute favorite. It adds so much efficiency to my life that I insist on loading it on every Mac I touch regularly. If I'm going to be on your Mac for more than 5 minutes, I'm going to put it on there because it drives me crazy when it's not there. It's so useful. If you're the kind of person who takes life easy, no worries, no hurry, content to do copy paste by moving your mouse all the way up to edit, pull down to copy or paste, and then this next tool, not for you. If you find drilling down through embedded folders to open applications a great joy in your life, then move along to another podcast. You don't need to listen to any more of this. If you're content to open your address book to search for a phone number, then just move along. Nothing for you here. If, however, you're a type A person like me and you pride yourself on efficiency, memorizing shortcuts in applications, making out aliases to move your applications to be more accessible, and find even moving your mouse all the way over to the dock to open an application tedious and dreary, and you're frustrated with those lost nanoseconds in your life, then listen up, because I've got an application you're going to love. The application I'm talking about is a utility called Quicksilver, which is still in beta, but it's from a company called Blacktree.com. The basic idea is that with a keystroke combination alone, you can launch an application, open a file, or look up a phone number or address, or even start an email to someone. The default keystroke built into Quicksilver is Command Spacebar. You can change that if you like, but I happen to think it works pretty well. When Quicksilver pops up, you type in a character or two, and the application or the file you're looking for pops up. If you hesitate at that point, more application icons show up so you can see what if the one you wanted was not the first one to come up, you can just tab down or arrow down to the one you want. So for example, if I hit the letter M, mail shows up first. If I hesitate a little bit, Microsoft folders and other applications that start with M or have M in them will start to join the list, and it starts to get kind of long. If I want mail, I just hit the letter M and a carriage return. Boom, I'm in mail. Launches it. If it's already open, I still use it that way to get to it. My primary use of Quicksilver is to launch applications because it's so efficient. I don't even use the dock anymore. In fact, I'm going to look and see if you can turn it off because it's always in my way and I don't use it at all. Literally do not use my dock. It's even more efficient if there's applications you get to very, very infrequently that are embedded down several folders. You can just get right to them when you wouldn't even barely remember where they were otherwise. There's one fun thing with Quicksilver. That's when you want to find someone in your address book. Since Niraj turned me on to this killer application, I'm going to use him as my example. If I want to call Niraj and I want to get his phone number, instead of going over and opening the address book, getting it into the dock and typing his name, clicking in the find field and typing in his name, instead of doing that, I hit Command Spacebar, type NIR. Up pops his V card. All I have to do, if I hit a carriage return right then, it automatically opens mail and creates a new mail message to Niraj. But what if I didn't want to mail him? I don't mail him that often. I just want to look up his phone number, or maybe his address. Well, if I hit Command Spacebar, NIR, and his V card shows up, I can hit the right arrow key and all of the fields for his V card are available, like his email address, his phone number, and his physical address. Here they added gratuitous graphics that are so cool. If I use the arrow keys to go down to his phone number or address and hit a carriage return, the information is suddenly displayed in a huge floating window, filling the entire screen. It's so dramatic, I actually jumped the first time I ran across it. It was kind of funny. I think I was actually on the phone with Niraj at the time. I might have even screamed or squeaked at least. It actually has some value beyond this wow factor. My memory is so bad. I'll bring up a phone number on screen, turn over around to my phone, dial the first three digits, and the other four are gone. Oh, if it's got an area code, there's no chance I'm going to come up with it first try. So what I'll do is I'll look over at my phone, dial the first three digits, and I can glance back at my computer no matter how far away I am. I mean, you can be across the room and you can still read it. So that's kind of a neat piece for me. Something I discovered recently is when one of those things is up on screen, like a phone number or an address, in particular an address, sometimes you want to copy and paste out of your address book into another application. All I have to do when it's up on screen is hit Command C and it's in the copy buffer. So then you can flip over to another application and paste it. There's a preference pane that allows the user to define what folders to index. So if you want Quicksilver to rapidly open documents for you too, you can do that. There's a performance hit if you have it indexed too much, which I discovered when I told it to index my entire hard disk. I didn't really find it that valuable for pulling up applications, or I'm sorry, pulling up documents, because just document names are too complicated, too long. It just didn't seem to have that much value. So I switched it around to where it's only indexing things like my applications and my utilities and that sort of thing. I think there's a separate little thing you got to add to tell it to look at your address book, and that's one of the best features, so make sure you look for that button there. One thing I've surmised, and I can't swear to this, but I think Quicksilver actually learns over time which applications or items you look for the most often. Because I'm pretty sure that when I first got it and I'd hit Command Spacebar and an M, I don't think Mail came up first. I think some other applications came up. But now, since that's the application I probably go into most of anything on my computer, it seems to pop up first all the time. So now I don't need to arrow key down to figure it out. I think it figured out what I wanted. Overall, Quicksilver is the one application I enjoy most of all that those I've reviewed here today. I hope you've enjoyed my reviews and you find some of these tools useful to you, and maybe you've learned a little bit today. Thank you for listening, and please stay subscribed to the NoSilla Cast.